Hello, my spooky friends.
My name is Cassie.
And I'm Caitlin.
And welcome into I'd Survive.
Hello, Cassie. How are you? How have you been?
Hello. I'm good.
You always sound like so unsure of yourself. Every time I'm like, how are you? You're like, well, yeah, great.
No, do you know how rare it is these days for someone to ask me, like, how are you? Like, people don't really do that. So then when it happens, I'm like, oh, how am I? Like, why can't I just
question.
Be a normal? I could be a normal person and be like, I'm doing great. How have you been, Caitlin? Like, no, but that's, I panic.
Yeah, I feel like my go-to is always like, I'm doing good. That's usually what I say, which I don't think people know what to do with that either. So. Yeah.
It's like, what does that mean? Are you okay?
Are
like,
you good?
I guess I genuinely am good because it's September and
yes.
I'm like finally starting to feel it because the weather is Septembering.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, we have good vibes all around. And I've been just having fun playing Tiny Bookshop. Before we get into the horror, let me just say, I've been playing Tiny Bookshop. You've been playing Tiny Bookshop. It's the coziest escape right now, and I just love it so much.
It's incredible. Like, I've been playing it on stream, and I'm telling you, I've never in my life been so relaxed on stream. Like, playing that game is so cozy and chill, and I feel zero stress about anything going on. And just, like, we've talked about the sound effects in that game are so good.
Yeah.
If you're a bookish person, 10 out of 10 recommend that game. I think you can get it Switch, PC,
yeah,
et cetera.
No, but like obviously other big cozy games are like Animal Crossing, Stardew. And like you said, those games are fun and cozy, but like playing them on stream, it's like there's so much pressure to like do things the right way and effectively.
Yes.
But with Tiny Bookshop, it's holding your hand the whole time and you just get to focus on
reading
the fun little book synopsis, what the hell?
Who knows?
I don't know. And giving them to the cute little character. It's just like, yeah, thank you for letting me turn my brain off. Just enough.
Exactly.
But like, it's so good. Anyways.
It's amazing. It's the best. And like you were saying, September, I pulled all my fall decorations out a little earlier than usual this year. But, you know, the air's been crisp. Like in the morning, I wake up and I'm like, oh, I'm a little chilly. And I love it. It makes me so happy.
Love a little chill.
Exactly.
And a little thrill. Speaking of thrillers, did you like that transition? Sorry. I was really proud of that one.
Wow. That was good. Yes. Nailed it.
No, I have not watched any horror this week, but I watched a thriller last night called Alice, Darling, and it stars Anna Kendrick, and it's like really devastating and emotional and sad. So if anyone, instead of wanting to be cozy with Tiny Bookshop and you'd rather be sad and unsettled and devastated – you can watch Alice, Darling. It was actually, it was pretty good. It was very like character heavy, girl bond friendships and like a woman trying to break out of an abusive relationship. So it's heavy, but.
Oh, yeah, that's
really, but the relationship was horrific. So that was my horror this week,
technically. Yeah, no, that sounds lovely.
I'm sure it does.
I'm sure everybody's going to skip on over there to be devastated.
Yeah.
The only horror that I watched was actually the movie that I was going to do as today's episode. But watching it, I realized, unfortunately, I didn't think it was going to fit. It's the movie called Heretic, which Cassie and I have talked about. And this is a very cool, very interesting movie with some choice stuff going on. It's just a very dialogue heavy film where like the personalities have to come through. And I was like, there's no way I can narrate this story. But it is a very cool, very psychological thriller kind of vibes film, which I know you like. I think you will like the movie. So if you do watch it, let me know.
Yeah. I wanted to watch it this week because I knew you were watching it. And then I wasn't able to get to it, but I'm probably going to watch it this week. It's just been floating on trending for so long and I just need to watch it.
Yeah. I don't know if we talked about this. Like, I never hear anybody talk about that movie, but it's always at the top of trending. And I'm like, okay.
Exactly.
Sure.
But I feel you on like the dialogue heavy thing because I've kicked myself in the ass a couple times trying to relay stories on this podcast where it's very dialogue heavy and writing those scripts are just, oh my gosh. It's like you just have to write so much and you still feel like it's not enough because it's just like the performances are what sells this line, you know?
Yes. And this is not just a dialogue heavy, but it's like a monologue heavy film where there's a lot of like this one character doing a lot of monologuing and being very like witty and stuff. So it's just like,
I don't think I can get that through,
you know?
Yeah.
So everybody go watch it. It's a fun one. The other horror movie that I watched is the movie that we are covering today. It is a movie called Alone and is from 2020. Don't get it confused with the many other movies called Alone because there are quite a few.
I bet, yeah.
Yeah, this was a common title. This is a movie that is directed by John Hyams and written by Matthias Olsen. Both people who I didn't, you know, I looked into them, didn't have a whole lot of credits that I was aware of. But it wasn't until I looked the movie up after that I realized that this movie is actually a remake of a 2011 Swedish film called Gone.
Oh.
And that was directed by the man who wrote this movie.
Okay.
So at least he was still connected to the project. It's not just like story based on. It was actually written by him.
Oh my God. I have to do a side note about that. Like just like him being involved in the remake and like you're being comforted by the fact that, okay, he's like,
yes,
he's approving that this is like, he's part of this movie. So that like you care about the creators of the original concepts and everything. Mm-hmm. And that brings us back to Wrong Turn.
Oh,
because Wrong Turn was like a completely different writer director. And then Wrong Turn 2 was a whole new team and the original creator was not involved. And then the whole rest of the franchise is just random people being attached to it. And I remember you asking like, oh, I wonder what the writer feels like the original writer feels about the rest of the franchise and what it did. And I ended up looking it up and I fear it is not good.
Oh no.
Yeah. He said that, you know, people taking his work and like making it their own, I guess, and just rolling with it and going off on their own adventure with it, he said it has been a big point of contention in his career.
Oh, wow.
So there's that. So I am happy to hear that the writer of this movie was the director of the original.
That is so interesting. Like, obviously, this is all, you know, it all comes down to contracts, but the fact that he doesn't have a say in his own creation, which, I mean, you could tie that right back to Taylor Swift. Like,
that's just, why did that immediately come to mind?
Yeah, literally, like, it's just people don't own their stuff in Hollywood. So, damn, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Noted. So, Alone, actually, so this is interesting. So, it released in very select theaters and digitally simultaneously.
Oh.
Its box office was really low, but you have to remember it was released in September 2020.
Right.
So it's like,
we weren't going out the house.
No, we were not. And I wonder if this movie, you know, initially was set to be a full theatrical kind of drop and then COVID and then it became digital and theater.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of background information on that, but that's kind of the way that I'm guessing, just given when it came out.
Yeah.
But that's about all I got on that. And we can jump right into it.
I love when I'm going in completely blind. Like, I don't know anything. Like, I don't know the vibe at all.
I think this is going to be an interesting episode for like one very, very specific reason.
Ooh.
In the sense that I think we're going to have a lot to talk about today.
Love.
Yes. So the opening shot of the film has us inside a U-Haul cargo trailer as a young woman opens up the door and we see her standing just outside the trailer with piles of boxes and furniture, odds and ends, etc. Very Corey Core, as I've heard lately.
Yeah. My boyfriend moved in recently with a lot of things. He brought a lot of things to my little house in Wisconsin.
I was sent a video. This is all true.
Yeah.
So she looks around at her belongings before she decides, all right, time to tackle this mess. And she begins to load the back of the U-Haul. Also worth noting that it seems like we are in a city, but like a quiet city, not many cars driving around. It's pretty quiet. She's able to park her U-Haul on the side of the road with no problems. And she loads it up. And I gotta admit, like, good for her. It's a lot of work, but also she like picks up this fake plant, right? It's like a pretty big fake plant, but it's a fake plant. It's one of the last items on the sidewalk. She walks over to the trailer and she kind of sighs and she's like, ugh, you know, like it's not going to fit. So she puts it back down. But like, girl, that could have fit in there. Like, the way she packed this truck was bad. And I got upset. Like, this only drove me insane, I think, because this past summer I drove my brother home from college and no car in the history of existence has ever been packed as tight as his car was.
Like, love a bit of car Tetris. Like, you got to get it. Yes. You can fit it. You can make it fit.
It will fit. And not to mention, like, she could have put it in the front seat. Like,
exactly.
It's like, girl.
It's not like it's a couch. Come on.
Exactly. Well, she does leave a little couch on the side as well. That is valid. I do think she still could have, if she put that in first, still worked it. But, you know, it's fine. I'll let it go. Anyway, she gets in her car with Oregon plates. So that kind of lets us know where we're at.
Okay.
She sets up her GPS and she drives off. Now, her GPS does say something to the extent of you will reach your destination in 4 days. So we are going on a trip.
Whoa.
We are going on one hell of a trip. So our girlie, her name is Jessica. She's clearly a bit out of it because she pulls up to a four-way stop and she just completely zones out. And she only snaps out of it when a car pulls up behind her and starts honking. And she kind of
she's already zoning out. It's been like 5 minutes and you have 4 days worth ahead of you, girlie.
I know. She's already out of it, but
we need some coffee.
We do. Oh, that sounds so good right now. She keeps going, and this is when we get our opening credits sequence, which is just over shots of her driving first through, you know, like the outskirts of the city, then the open highway, lots of driving shots. And eventually she ends up on a very wildernessy kind of highway, you know, like one lane each way, mountains, trees, windy, whatever. I don't know if that kind of highway has a name. You know, there's like highway, throughway.
Oh, freeway. Like freeway. I don't even know what all that is, if I'm honest.
I don't know if those words all mean the same thing or if there are different types of highway. These are not things that I think about most days. So whatever kind of highway it is, that's the highway that it is.
Yeah.
So we have an overhead shot of her car driving down this road before the screen cuts to black and we get white text on the screen that just says the road.
Oh.
Which – that always throws me in a movie when I'm like, oh, okay, we're getting like segments or sections here. Interesting. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I love it. Sometimes I hate it. But I'm always open to it because it can be interesting.
Agreed. One I always go back to is The Substance. Like when that first happens in The Substance, you're like, what?
Yes.
So good. So Jessica, she's driving down this road when she comes up upon a car in front of her. It's like a dark blue Jeep driving really, really, really slow. And according to my research, which I don't know why I researched this, but I did. It's when I say Jeep, I don't mean like Jeep. It's what I believe is a Jeep Patriot. One of those Jeeps that kind of just looks like an SUV.
Oh, okay.
You know, not like a cool Jeep.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'm going to look it up just so I can see exactly what this looks like.
That's the closest Jeep Patriot that it seemed to be.
Oh, yeah. And not as cool as what first came to mind, I fear.
Exactly. Not a cool car.
Yeah.
So anyway, she like drives up behind this Jeep and it's obviously really frustrating to her because it's one lane in each direction and like it's so annoying getting stuck behind someone who's driving.
Yeah.
So slow. So she kind of like keeps peering over, like waiting for her opportunity to pass. Cause you know, once you get that dotted line, you can make that pass, which I don't think I've ever done. I've definitely been in the car when my dad's done it.
Really? But
I haven't had to really do it. Like it's not common to have those
I have
kinds of
so
roads.
Much.
Really?
I mean, I guess it's probably, we have a lot. I have a lot more of those kind of roads, especially when I'm like, my family has like a cabin in northern Wisconsin.
Yeah,
and it's like a 4-hour drive and a lot of it is just like one road, one direction, one on the other direction, and you're on it for like 40 miles, like 50 miles. Oh, I've definitely been passing people.
Does it ever freak you out or are you just like, this is just normal? That's just normal for you?
Yeah, no, it does not. It doesn't at all. It's just, you just do it. Yeah.
I hate the thought of that.
That's so funny.
So Jessica's doing a little bit, you know, of tailgating, can't lie. And she also keeps leaning into the opposite lane to see if she can pass.
Yep.
But, you know, every time she checks, there's a car coming. So she just goes back into her lane. Then the car in front of her, like, starts kind of pumping on the brakes a little. It's not really brake checking, but I don't know. They're just kind of like pumping on the brakes. And she's just like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
And so eventually she gets to a dotted line and there's no other cars coming. So she takes this opportunity to pass. And as she's passing the car, she takes a little peek at the driver to like see, you know, you always want to know like who the hell is this person?
I always be looking like who is driving this bus?
She looks over, but unfortunately the windows are like dirty and fogged up. So she can't see who this person is, but she's like, whatever. So she keeps going. She's getting ready to like shift back into the lane in front of this car. Mm-hmm. but the Jeep driver speeds up.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. And just like keeps pace with her. And she glances over him like, what the fuck? Because, yeah, this is insane behavior. What are you doing? And then she glances back up to the road in front of her and sees that a pretty large trailer truck is now coming down the road from the other direction.
Oh, my God.
Dude, my heart. I can't even imagine.
No. So,
like, that's so scary to me.
Yeah. No, I would. Okay. So I know what I would do.
What would you do?
I would, like, break kind of hard, do a swift like back into the right lane, and then I'd do a U-turn and I'd be like, okay, bye then. I'm not even like, I don't care that I have a 4-hour drive. Like I'll leave in 30, I can spare 30 minutes and just for you to get lost.
Yep.
And I don't have to see you again. Cause like you're trying to kill me.
I have to agree that if I were her, if I were Jess, I definitely would slow down and go back behind the Jeep. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But instead, she's like, no, I'm going to get in front of the Jeep. So she speeds up more. And the truck starts honking its horn and she's panicking. She's screaming at this person next to her to move, but obviously they're not listening or paying attention. Mm-hmm. So she absolutely floors it in an attempt to pass, which is difficult for her considering she has the U-Haul on the back, remember?
Yeah, wait, that's true. I wouldn't be able to pull a U-E. Like, I'd be – I could never with a U-Haul.
Yeah, that would be kind of difficult. I will I'll give her that. So Jessica absolutely floors it, and she is able to pass, like, just at the last second. Of course, she slides back in front of the Jeep, narrowly missing this collision with the truck. And she breathes a sigh of relief as she gains some distance away from this Jeep when suddenly the Jeep speeds up and begins tailgating – her, of course.
Oh my God.
Right. So the driver of the Jeep starts honking and flashing their headlights at her, continuing to aggressively tailgate. Mm-hmm. And eventually she does essentially what I feel like you would do. She comes upon a turnoff. So she just takes it, stops her car, and lets the Jeep speed on by. She's like, hell no, not dealing with that.
Right.
Later that night, she stops for gas in what appears to be a quite desolate small town. And she sets up the pump. And then pulls out her cell phone. She dials a number and an older gentleman picks up on the other side saying, hello, sweetheart. Why don't you call the home number? And Jessica replies saying, because I wanted to talk to you and not mom. She's like, oop.
Oh.
Awkward. Tea. Okay.
Yeah.
Her dad points out that the signal's kind of bad and asks Jessica if she's at home. She says that, well, she actually left already. And her dad is surprised because he and his wife were supposed to come over and help her, like, prep to move tomorrow.
Right. Okay. I'm assuming that they are from the town that she's leaving?
Yes.
Okay. Leaving family behind is sad.
Yeah. And I feel like if I did that to my parents, like, they would be so mad at me.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if I left a day early and just didn't say goodbye, like, I – yeah. Whoa.
My parents would be so mad at me if I left. Like, I can't.
Also that. So I can't be doing that. So true. So Jessica explains that she's just trying to avoid mom in the, quote, ensuing drama. Mm. Now, during this call, out of focus in the background, we can see a car slowly creeping down the road. And eventually, Jessica turns and notices the car. It looks eerily similar to the car from the semi-altercation this morning. The car crawls past the gas station while Jessica stares it down before it quickly speeds up and just takes off. And you can't be sure, but it is it's a Jeep, and it looks like the same color. It's night. You can't see it super well, but it's giving the vibes.
I would definitely talk myself into, like, I would talk myself down a paranoia spiral right there. Because I know it has to be the person because you're telling me the plot of a horror movie.
Yep, yep.
But in real life, I feel like you probably shouldn't assume that, and it's probably not.
Right.
But I would still be so – I'd be like, Dad, come pick me up.
Right. So Jessica just, like, finishes up her call with her dad by saying she just wanted to let him know that she left already, and she says before she hangs up, say hi to mom for me.
Mm-hmm.
So she puts the pump back, gets in the car, drives off again, and she doesn't drive for long because it's time to settle in for the night. She finds a motel and checks in. She seems pretty down and out of it. Like, she has not smiled once this entire time we've seen her.
Oof.
She's just had, like, a very down look on her face.
Okay.
And she's sitting on her bed just staring out the window. And suddenly we hear her phone buzzing. And she glances down at the caller ID and sees that it's her mother. So she simply turns the phone face down and ignores the call.
Sure.
A little while later, Jessica sits on the bed in the dimly lit motel room. And she's scrolling through some photos on her iPad. They're all photos of her and a man, looks to be her age, definitely couple-y vibes. Looking back at her face, we can see that she's doing everything in her power not to cry and holding back, trying to hold back some sobs. Our suspicions are immediately confirmed when she throws the iPad to the side and covers her face and begins to bawl.
Mm-hmm.
She quickly breathes her way through it, and it seems as though she falls asleep.
Dang. Relationship that intense that she has to move across the country.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I assume yeah. At this point.
That is definitely the vibes you get.
Yeah.
So the next morning, she wakes up to her iPhone alarm, time to rise and shine for another day of driving. She walks outside, gets in her car, and looks through her bag for her keys, and she's getting herself settled in for the drive. You know, you always gotta like, all right, mirror's good, get my stuff, like, yeah. Where's my drink, blah, blah, blah. She's getting herself ready to go. When the camera pans over to reveal a blue Jeep parked a few spots away from her. Yes, of course.
I'm shocked, first of all, that we didn't get a knock on our motel door. But that's almost scarier at this point because it's like they're in for the long game. Like this person is ready to terrorize us with some slow suspense.
Mm-hmm.
And that is almost scarier than just like, just fucking knock on my door. Let me get this over with.
Well, from another angle, we watch as she fidgets with the radio and a man makes his way over to the driver's side window and knocks on it.
Okay. Maybe this is scarier. Maybe I was joking.
You got it, Cassie. He's knocking. He's here and he's knocking.
I don't want it. I take it back.
And this scares Jessica, obviously. And the man gestures for her to like roll her window down. And she does, but just a little bit. And this is like an old car where she like literally cranks the window down.
Nice.
So the man apologizes for scaring her and then asks if she recognizes him. We get to see his face now, and oh, girl.
Oh.
Textbook serial killer.
Okay.
He has the Dahmer glasses. You
of
know
course.
The glasses. Yep.
Yes, I do.
He's got a mustache. He's got a less than stellar hairline. Like, I'm scared of this man. And
I know that I there's like just him. A really nice, innocent man listening right now that you just described.
I'm so like, sorry. What the fuck? Listen, if you wear Dahmer glasses, yeah. I'm sorry. Don't wear those.
Exactly. That's something that we can change. Just please don't. No one's allowed anymore. It's ruined.
Exactly. So Jessica shakes her head and is like, oh, I don't think I know you. And the man turns and gestures to the blue Jeep as he says, I'm driving that. Jessica, like, looks a little weirded out. And she's just like, right.
Okay.
He's pretty chipper as he's like, yeah, just wanted to apologize for yesterday. I was texting. I didn't see you trying to pass. And then I realized I was running late and needed to pass you back. Teehee, my bad kind of energy. Jessica's like, just wants him to go away, clearly. So she goes, it's okay. What's done is done.
Yeah, please just leave. Hello, what's happening?
We don't need to hash this over.
Yeah.
So he goes, yeah, I scared you a little bit. Like, yep, and you're still standing here and you're still scaring me. Like, please walk away.
Right.
And she's just like, okay, yeah, I gotta go. And this man goes, do you live nearby? That's
okay.
Like,
even before, well, exactly. That's an immediate, okay, this is, you're insane. Like, I'm in danger.
Mm-hmm.
But even before that, I feel like I'd be so creeped out. Like, there would be maybe, I'm like, 2% chance that you're just this weird guy who is trying to apologize and you're just coming off weird because you're weird and you're not dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
But no, you're right. This question, it's like, literally, why? Like, what are you trying to do here? I'd be so scared.
Yeah, I would be scared right here. I wouldn't do anything rash right here because like we're in a parking lot.
And is it just, you said it's pretty desolate, like this station, like there's not people around?
Well, we're at the motel now. So there's like definitely people staying in this motel. There's other cars.
I'd run for the little check-in.
You would? Room. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So like he's not even done.
Okay.
So he's like, do you live nearby? And she's like, not really. And then he goes, where are you going? Bro,
what would you say to that?
I would lie and give like a different
name. I'm headed to my parents' house.
Yeah, that's actually a good one. That's a good one. She just says north, which I don't think I'd say that.
Yeah,
because that like, I mean, there's probably one road out of here.
Yeah, and
know?
I'm assuming obviously she's lying, right? I think she's lying because if she has a 4-day trek, unless she's like going up into like glacial Canada,
that's so true.
Maybe she's lying, but that's not a good enough lie, I don't think, if that's what she's trying to do.
That is a good point. I don't know if that's just kind of an oversight script-wise or what.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know. That's a good question.
Well, is she, can you tell? Is she like really, really creeped out, or is she just still confused?
I wouldn't say she's really creeped out. She's confused and like definitely like uncomfortable.
Sure.
With this interaction. So he's like, oh yeah, you know, I'm always in the area. What's your name? And she tells him Jessica, which again, girly, you need to be lying some
more. Right. Yeah.
But he apologizes again and goes, see you around, before wishing her a good trip and walking away. And like I wrote, like, that was a really unsettling interaction, but we can't really report anything or like whatever.
Right.
So we're just going to drive away, which honestly, I think I would do in this situation, because like, it's not weird enough for like, I'm going to go in and be like, some guy was talking to me, and they'll be like, okay, I don't care.
I would drive to my parents' house. Like, I would hightail it back.
You go
and
back.
I would go to my parents and I'd be like, this was so weird.
Mm-hmm.
I know we've talked in the past about how it's smart to like drive to your police station if like something is happening, but like you said, I don't know if it's enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd probably go back to my parents and just like be like, can I spend the night here? I'll drive out tomorrow. Like, I don't know, this guy was low-key stalking me. It was weird.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, no, that would probably be a good plan.
Yeah,
but she's just gonna keep heading on her way.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like we spend a good chunk of the morning driving, mostly on the highway. But then we are driving down a very sheltered road. Seems like it's a two-way road, but like very narrow.
Mm-hmm.
And she's driving down this road. And as she rounds a bend, she sees a car broken down smack dab in the middle of the road. It's got its hood up. And
sorry,
we can
buddy.
See someone bent down in front of the car checking it out. And in case you didn't already guess, yes, it is the blue Jeep.
Yeah. Oh, that sucks. Anyways.
So as she nears the car, the man looks up, and yes, of course, it's Mr. Creepy Man.
Mm-hmm.
And she breaks and just stares him down. And he stares back. Jessica smartly reaches for the lock on her door and pushes it down before slowly beginning to drive around the Jeep. But of course, the man like walks in front of her and puts his hand up like, hey, stop, stop. Scared and confused, Jessica stops her car. Mr. Creep walks around to the passenger side of the car and leans down to look at her.
As soon as he's out from the front of my car, I'm booking it.
Same. I think at this point, I'm gone.
Yeah.
So he asks her to roll the window down, and she does, but like a very, very small amount.
Yeah.
And he's just like, hey. And Jess is like, okay, like what's going
like
on?
What now?
And he explains that the engine just died on him. His car's a piece of crap. And Jess is awkwardly like, that's too bad. And in a moment of silence, she's like, do you want me to call a tow truck? And he's like, oh, no. Can you just give me a ride to the closest gas station? Just help me move the car out of the road first. I'll push. You steer. It'll be great.
No.
Jess is doing everything she can to get out of this without making it too obvious. She's like, I'm in a hurry. I'll call the closest gas station and they can come help.
This isn't you, right? Like, you're just going to book it, right?
No, I'm not talking to this man.
Right. What do you mean? I don't care. Because we've had this conversation before, too, where it's like we worry about politeness,
mm-hmm.
you know? But I'm not caring about politeness at all in this situation.
Nope.
I feel like most people wouldn't and shouldn't.
No, and that's what's I was thinking about exactly that, how we've talked a lot about people pleasing. But this is a situation where I'm not thinking that at all.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I don't need to. I can just drive away. And
like, this is a stranger. Leave me alone.
Exactly. Yeah. So he keeps insisting, and he's like, I need help moving the car. It's hard with this thing. And he gestures to the sling on his arm, which this is the first time I'm realizing that he has it, because he's wearing a jacket, so I never noticed it before.
No, that's so Ted Bundy of him, you know? You know, about how he would, like, lure people by having a fake broken leg and be like, I need help.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's definitely – doesn't seem very legit.
Yeah.
At this point. I mean, at least to me. Damn it, Jessica. So finally, Jessica is like, I need to go. I'm late for a meeting. And she does speed off, leaving the man behind.
Okay, good.
Which I'm like, okay, like I would have done that 5 minutes ago, but that's fine.
At this point, if he finds her again, there's got to be a tracker. Like, how do you know where I am?
Exactly.
Because it's got to take him a decent amount of time to – I guess you said this is like – one major road, though, if you just stay on it without taking other paths,
it does
I guess he
way,
could catch
yeah.
up. Ugh, but I'd be like finding all of the weird random paths just to lose this guy.
Yes, like even if I have to go somewhere completely different and spend a day there, like I just at this point
it's worth it. Yeah.
So she spends another full day driving, and at night she stops at a rest stop to have a cigarette and take a little break.
Mm-hmm.
She sits smoking at like a picnic bench, and there's a couple other people in the lot as well. There's a man getting out of a truck to use the bathroom, another one just taking a quick rest, and Jess pulls out her phone to make a call. We hear a woman pick up on the other side and quickly realize that it is her mother, and her mother wants to know immediately, like, why did you leave without telling us?
Mm-hmm.
And Jess makes an excuse saying she was up early that day and decided just to get going early. As she's on the phone with her mom, we can see a couple of different men in the background. I wouldn't say they're doing anything wrong at all, but to me, it feels intimidating because, like, we are a lone woman at a rest stop at night. So, like,
right.
Everybody's sus. So, like, I'm scared of these dudes, even though they're just standing there doing nothing.
Yeah, valid.
Jess's mom is on the phone being gentle, but also asking a lot of questions. Did you start smoking again? Did you call the therapist? Are you there yet? She just honestly sounds like a very worried parent. And Jess is just annoyed. She insists that she's fine. She kind of just, I don't even know why she called her. It's kind of weird that she initiated this call to me.
Okay.
But mom presses a little more and she says, we just think it was a bad idea. You should have stayed home till you felt better. You have friends and family here who will support you. It's been 6 months. It's time for me to move on, Jess replies. Suddenly, a blue Jeep rumbles its way into the parking lot.
like we need to just take a left turn somewhere. Literally, I'm sorry, girly.
it's actually so funny. Like, she's like over and over. So Jess tells her mom that she has to go. What? First of all, what? What do you mean you have to go?
Tell your mom what's going on.
She's like, I gotta go. And she hangs up the phone. I'm like, what?
Oh my goodness. Are we gonna spend the whole movie? Is she like, does she frustrate you throughout this whole movie, or does she just have moments where it's like, wait, what do you, what?
It's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
And you will see a lot of that.
Oh boy.
Jess quickly gathers her stuff back into her bag and makes a beeline for her car. And while she's on her way to her car, the other two men very conveniently pull out of the parking lot.
Mm-mm.
So it's just Jess and the blue Jeep.
No.
So she makes it to her car, gets inside, just as the man gets out of his car and starts walking toward her.
Oh my God, he's probably going to be angry at this point. Like, why didn't you help? I don't even know what's creepier or scarier, I guess. Him being angry or him still like putting a smile on and being like, hey, you didn't do anything back there, but you could help me now. Actually, what I need now, you know what I mean?
Right. Like, yeah, honestly, the smile is so creepy because he's just so nonchalant about everything.
Right.
But she pulls away just as he's approaching. Like, he tries to say, hey, but just pulls away. Just
okay.
Immediately.
So he still is having like level-headed energy, which is creepy because like, what are you still doing here? But
at this moment, yes.
Okay.
So she goes to pull out of this lot, but unfortunately a white van is blocking the exit.
Oh.
And the car is on but idle, and this person like gets out and looks for something in the back of the truck, and of course she's like screaming and honking at them to hurry up and move.
Yeah.
But the creepy man makes his way to her window. Ew. He pounds on the passenger side glass saying, "I was trying to go to the bathroom and you almost hit me. What the hell is your problem?" So now he's getting angry.
Okay.
But Jess screeches away as the white van finally moves. And once again, we've had a seemingly close call with a weirdo.
Yeah.
So Jess continues to drive for a bit down another desolate foresty road.
Perfect.
When she spots a pair of headlights behind her.
Mm-hmm.
And her eyes go wide as she finally reaches for her cell phone to call 911.
Okay. This has to be enough at this point, right?
I think so,
yeah.
I don't know that I would have called, but I think it was enough when you came upon him in his broken down car. I think at that point even.
Okay.
To me, that would be enough for me to call. But I don't know if I would.
Yeah.
Well, awkward.
I might, because I would be thinking at that point that this man, I would know, like, he is after me. Like, he's not going to stop. And so I'd probably call more as like preemptive, because right now maybe I don't have enough. But by the time you get out to help me, you're going to see he's still – like, there's going to be more story to tell.
So it rings once before an operator answers 911, what's your emergency?
Mm-hmm.
And the service isn't great, but the operator is still able to pick up on the details. Someone's been following Jess. They're currently closing in on her right now. The operator asks for Jess's location, but she has no idea where she is.
Right.
Her voice is getting more panicked as the car is now directly behind her and revving its engine a little bit. the car moves to the opposite lane and speeds by Jess, and it's not the Jeep.
Oh.
Jess takes a few deep breaths before telling 911, oh, sorry, it's a false alarm.
No, it's not. Like, you are not paranoid. Enough mm-hmm. has happened. You mm-hmm. know he's still going to be coming for you. Because I get what they're going for. It's like, oh, okay, I'm just getting paranoid because yep. of that weird guy, but it was nothing. Nah.
Right. Luckily, the operator says that she's going to connect Jess to an officer to explain the situation regardless, even if it's not an emergency situation, to like explain the situation.
Amazing.
But oh. I don't know if she actually does talk that officer or not, because we kind of just like do a time jump.
Oh.
And it's like, I'm assuming she did.
Right.
But it's not really clear.
It's just, and it's just recorded rather than they're going to be investigating it.
Right. You know, exactly. Just like basically putting in a report.
Yeah.
So Jess keeps driving down the road when her tires seem to give out of nowhere.
What the hell?
She begins to lose control of her car and she fights against it before driving straight into a ditch. She crawls out of the car on the passenger side and looks at the damage. Walking back toward the trailer, she can see that she's got a flat tire, and upon closer inspection, it does appear that the tire's been slashed.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, makes sense. So Jess looks up, and for the first time since she's crashed, a pair of headlights appear far down the road.
Oh my God, how does he have this timing?
I know. It's so convenient.
Yeah.
So naturally, she's immediately struck with fear because, yeah, it could be him. So she stares down the car until it gets close enough for her to realize that it is in fact him.
Yeah.
She quickly unhitches the trailer and jumps back into the car as the Jeep pulls up just in front of her and parks. She tries to get her car moving, but it simply won't budge. It's like kind of stuck in the ditch, like the tires just spin out.
Yeah.
And from a faraway shot, it's a really eerie shot because it's super quiet and we just can see the man exit the Jeep holding a tire iron as he walks up to her car and smashes her passenger side window.
Okay,
finally, for the first time, showing like his intent.
Yeah, you know? He's a little angry now. Okay, we got there.
Yeah. So Jess, screaming, tries to crawl out of the driver's side, but he's too quick. He unlocks the door through the broken window and climbs inside. A scuffle ensues, but the man is able to overpower her. He mm-hmm. just punches her in the face and she's out. He then pulls out a syringe of some sort and inserts it into her neck.
Great.
Mm-hmm. He caresses her face for a long time before the screen cuts to black with white text reading, "The River."
Oh.
And this is our first score check-in.
Okay. Oh, what? He's going to take us to a river? That's not where I expected that to go, but okay.
No, this was definitely a weird text, like, thing to come up for me because I was like, huh, the river.
Yeah, I was waiting. I was ready for like the basement. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? Okay, so I'm guessing you went with 100%.
Did not.
You did not. I think I'm gonna go 99%.
Damn. Okay.
Because first of all, I think I would have gone back to my parents. I think I would have called the police. I think I would have tried to like go down random roads to lose this guy pretty early on.
Yep.
But then if I'm heard to like this last scene where he's managed to slash a tire,
mm-hmm.
actually I'll go like 95.
Okay.
Because I feel like there's a chance there that like the crash could have been bad enough from that.
True, true.
I just die in the crash, but I don't think I'm going to be dying at his hands. I think I'm 100% as far as like being killed by this guy at this point, because clearly it's one of those people that's trying to play a game, and I'm guessing she's going to like wake up somewhere and we're about to be like tortured and he's going to be spewing some psycho bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that, you know, that's a good point. I think for me, the biggest thing about looking at the first act is just like, I feel like it's hard to, I don't know. Why do I feel like mm-hmm. I would have gotten away? It's so easy for me to sit here and be like, there's no way he would have been able to follow me for that long. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know. But at the end of the day, yes, he does capture her. And looking at it in the sense that he's going to overpower me because he's right. a man and I'm a small woman. Like I put 92 just because okay. there's some leeway there for
yeah.
death. But I'm hoping I figure my way out of this.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
So as we cut back in from our black screen, Jess is waking up on the floor of what appears to be a small basement. So you're kind of right about that.
I was like, so we're going to wake up in a basement. Why is it not called the basement?
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
So the floor is concrete. One wall is purely insulation. Another's unfinished wood. And there is a small window close to the ceiling, providing the only light in the room. Jess tries to get herself up off the ground, but she's having a really hard time. She's both weak, and it seems like she's still under the influence of whatever was given to her via the syringe.
Yeah.
She begins to do the things you'd expect her to do. She looks out the window, just kind of sees some grass and trees. She fidgets with the door. She looks around the room. There's just not much in here to help her or give her any information. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, heavy footsteps can be heard from the floor above her before disappearing out the door. She looks through the window again to see that somebody is pushing a wheelbarrow in the back. And it's like one of those windows that's like level with
the ground.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. So she can only see like the feet and the wheelbarrow.
Okay.
And she just starts screaming at this person, like, help, let me out. And the footsteps retreat back toward the window as the man, yes, the man, crouches down in front of the glass. Mm-hmm. And Jess continues to plead with him to let her out. He just holds up a finger to his lips, Pretty Little Liars style, and walks away. Like, I don't know. He's just like, shit. Okay. He just like walks away. It's like, okay, sir.
Wrong universe, sir. Hello.
Wrong show. It's nighttime now, and Jess has been locked down here all day. She just sits on the floor in the middle of the room, and now the footsteps she's been hearing above start to make their way downstairs.
Ew.
I know. The man enters the dark room with a flashlight and holds the beam on her while neither of them say a word for an uncomfortably long time. Jess finally does speak up and hits this man with many a classic line of like, what do you want? Money? I can get you money. I won't tell anyone, I swear. You know, all the right things people say in these situations.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, he's just smiling at her. And then he says, do you think you're the first one to say that? And funnily enough, sir, like, no, definitely not, because right, that's literally what everybody says. But then he tells Jet, oh my God, ew. Like, this part I hate. He's like, take your clothes off.
Scary.
Literally, like, the way he says it just, like, makes me so uncomfortable.
Is he and he's still, like, smiling and being just weird.
Yes. And Jess just, like, she just stands there until he says, do you want some help? And no. I literally wrote, ew, 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 because, like, it's bad. She says, I just need to use the bathroom first. He gives her a smile as he gestures to the door saying, go ahead. But when Jess takes a few steps towards the door, he just runs up behind her and slams her into the wall so that she falls to the ground.
Okay.
So he walks to the door and locks it before laying on the floor with her. He gets on the floor with her and confirms for us that he did slash her tires at the rest stop. Mm-hmm. I almost didn't slash all the way through. I almost gave up.
That is such a mind game. Mm-hmm. Like being like, oh, you almost got away, but of course you didn't.
Yeah, exactly. He's so gross, dude.
Yeah.
He whips out Jess's iPad now. I guess he must have taken it from her car, and mm-hmm. he plays a video on the device. It's a video of Jess and the man from the photos she was looking at earlier. She starts talking about wanting to learn a magic trick and says, that's the only reason I married this man. He impressed me with this magic trick. So we're like, oh, ex-husband vibes.
Yeah, even obviously an even bigger deal. Like, that's what I'm saying. It's got to be something like a really intense love to like hurt you that much that you're running away when it doesn't work.
So the man keeps the video playing and is like, you two are cute together. Do you think he's worried about you? Because like he doesn't know
that
they're not together. And Jess doesn't answer. She just cries to herself on the floor. So the man turns off the video and grabs her throat saying, I asked you a question. She still doesn't reply. So the man looks at her hands and then rips a necklace off of her neck. Jess has been wearing the ring on a chain around her neck rather than on her finger.
Mm-hmm.
The man examines the ring before saying, he left you. Jess replies saying, he died. And the man, of course, asks, how?
Oh, my God. Why did that not cross my mind?
Didn't cross mine either.
Interesting. But, of course, that makes sense. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I didn't have that thought until she said it. I was like, oh, that makes more sense than...
Yeah. Like, than a rough breakup or even divorce. Yeah.
Right. So the man is like, how? And Jess, through sobs, tells the man that he killed himself.
Oh, my God.
The man goes, in what way? And like, oh my God, I can't, dude. I literally can't. Jess tells him that it was a gun, and this man just keeps going. And you found him? Ugh, that's tough. Jess just breaks down sobbing as this man caresses and like comforts her.
Ew.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's trying to go for Stockholm Syndrome vibes. I don't think this is really the way to do it. but in his mind, I wonder if that's what he's trying. He's trying to like create a bond or dependency, you know?
Mm-hmm. I see that. So he eventually gets up. He unlocks the door, walks out, and relocks it behind him. The next day, Jess is again sitting on the floor of the basement. Mm-hmm. She kind of stops and very intentionally listens for a moment. It seems to be silent. The man is probably not here. So she begins to fidget with the door and she's like looking through the keyhole. And I'm going to be honest with you, like, I don't quite know what's happening here, but I'm going to explain it. Okay. Bear with me for a second. So she has this like aha moment. So she takes off her like zip up hoodie and slides it under the door before then pounding on the door near the lock. Nothing happens, so she glances up and sees a nail sticking out of a beam of wood, and she's got to have it. So she tries to pull this nail out with her bare hands.
Ow.
And yeah, I know. That doesn't work. So she grabs her sweatshirt and uses it to like wrap around the nail and pull it out, and it does come loose. So okay. She has it. Yeah. She goes back to the door, slides the sweatshirt back underneath again, and then shoves the nail into the keyhole and starts fidgeting with the lock. And this is when on the other side of the door, the key shakes loose and falls onto her sweatshirt so she can slide it back to herself under the door. I don't know how she knew the key was there, nor do I know why he like left it in the lock, nor do I know how that works. But I actually don't know. Like, maybe I'm just dumb, but I'm like, I don't know how she knew that. Whatever.
Yeah. Wait, so the sweatshirt was just to catch the key?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's then weird.
Pull it back underneath. Like, I don't know. It was just like a really bizarre thing for her to just magically think of.
Right.
I don't know.
Good for you, girly.
Good for you. I would not have thought to do that.
Nope.
So she unlocks the door and creeps up the stairs very quietly. We can see now that we are inside of a log cabin. Jess makes her way to the kitchen, and once she gets there, she can see that the man has just arrived back and is walking to the front door holding a paper grocery bag.
Mm-hmm.
Jess has to think fast, so she just runs into a closet that's directly next to the front door. And she makes it in just in time. But the weird, unfortunate thing about this closet door is that it has to be held at like just the right position because it doesn't shut. It stays open, but like she needs to hold it a little more closed so that he can't see her. It's like a very awkward thing, but like she's just trying very hard while she's literally shaking to hold this door perfectly still. So anyway, the man walks over to the table and unpacks his paper bag. And at one point he turns around and glances toward the closet door, but it's clear that he can't see her.
Mm-hmm.
So he sits in the chair with his back facing the door and begins to eat some of the food he just bought. He's got a block of cheese, an apple, and I think some crackers.
Okay. He's just gnawing on a block of cheese?
Well, he does have a knife and he cuts it.
Oh, good. Okay.
But like, I would definitely gnaw on a block of cheese, so.
I mean, yeah.
No judgment. He's enjoying his little snack when his phone rings. He picks it up and suddenly he's just the most normal man you've ever heard.
Oh.
He says to the person on the other side that, oh, he's at the hotel right now and he's just going to go out and get some lunch in a little bit. He goes on to say how beautiful it is here. This place looks out over the water. It's gorgeous. You and I should come here sometime, he says. And now we get the impression that he's talking to his wife.
Oh my God. That's the scariest thing. Because I assume the wife has no idea what gets up to. That's why I fear men.
I've seen
so many stories of like, I had no idea my husband was a serial killer. Hello?
Yep.
How?
Yep. I feel like that, like just Criminal Minds, even watching all of those episodes, there's so many cases where the spouse has no idea.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's so scary.
So scary. Because I would like to think I'm someone who would be like, I would clock that because I'm just so paranoid from the start anyways.
Right?
But I mean, you can't say like all these women are just oblivious. Like clearly also these, like a lot of the time it's men that are just pulling this off and like serial killing? Hello? I don't know.
It's insane.
I'm scared. I'm spiraling. Let's move on. I'm sure the rest of the movie will pull me out of the spiral for sure.
Oh, yeah. For sure. So he talks to his wife. Oh my God. No, So he talks to his wife a bit more about random stuff before asking to talk to Mina. So we find out that he has a young
daughter. No, he has a daughter. He has a daughter.
Yeah, and he's like on the phone calling her little bug and sweetheart. Like, it's so, like, my brain went burr over that. Like, thinking about what he's doing to women and having a daughter, like, it's crazy.
Like, do you think it's a okay, so obviously people who are like this are just genuinely mentally ill, of course. So that plays a huge factor. But do you think he is, like, genuine with his affection toward his wife and kid? You know what I mean? Like, that is real to him? Or do you think he's faking it and all he really cares about is his side hustle, killing these women, and he just needs – he's using them as, like, a front to look good?
That's a good question, because I would definitely say, that, like, in these situations, the side hustle, so to speak, is the more important thing to these, usually mostly men. But, like, because, like, that's the whole question of, like, is it psycho versus socio? One of them can have feelings versus the other can't.
I think socio doesn't have, like, human emotion.
Right. But a psychopath can have human emotion.
I didn't know that. But if you're saying it, one of them can, I would assume, it has to be the psycho.
I thought that was true. Maybe I'm wrong. But because, like, I don't know. It seems in a lot of cases like they do have, like, a genuine love and care for these people.
Yeah, which is just so wild to wrap your head around.
Yeah, it's creepy.
Like, they genuinely would never hurt them, love with them with all their hearts, and then go and kill other people. Like, it's no big deal. Like, I don't understand. I mean, obviously, I don't understand. That's not crazy for me to say, but
no,
it's crazy.
But, it doesn't matter how much it is, like, a real thing and how much I've literally watched TV shows and stuff on it, I still can never comprehend it. It doesn't, it's just beyond my comprehension.
Yeah.
It's crazy. But during all of this, him talking so lovingly to his wife and kid on the phone, Jess is just doing her best to remain completely still and silent in the closet. The man ends his call and gets up, heading down the hall that Jess came from. It seems like he's about to go into the basement. So as soon as he's out of sight, Jess books it out the front door and runs straight for the trees, right?
Amazing. Oh, wait. Okay, so what's the surroundings like? Like, where are we?
Middle of the forest.
Damn it.
Yes.
Okay.
So the music they actually use here is crazy because the way it cuts in, as soon as she, like, bolts for the door, the music comes in and it sounds like a shotgun going off. And then it slows down to be more of the pace of her footsteps. It's actually quite cool, but really unsettling.
Yeah.
So this man's quickly noticed that Jess is gone, picks up on what's happening, and he too runs into the trees. And I don't think he sees her, but, like, he just happens to, like, go the same way she did, because the way she went just makes the most sense.
Sure.
So Jess is running. He's running after her, but it's not like he gets to see her. So tell me – no, that's what I wrote. So tell me why Jess starts screaming for help.
Oh, my God.
Like, bad idea, right?
It's such a bad idea. Yeah. I would immediately assume, like, if this person is crazy enough to kidnap me and put me in his basement, that we are nowhere near people.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
And, of course, I would also assume as soon as I leave the closet, I'm like, he's going to hear my footsteps from downstairs. Yep. He knows I'm booking it. So I just need to hide.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I'm on team hide. For sure. So eventually she trips because, of course, she does.
Right.
But, oh my God, she looks down at her foot and she stepped on, like, this thick ass twig that's pierced itself, like, through her foot. Not perpendicular. Like, it's kind of, like, parallel. Like, it goes into her foot kind of parallel.
Oh.
And it goes deep in there. And then she has to pull it out. And it's so gross.
I hate a sliver, so I cannot be handling this.
No.
I'd end it all right there. I'd just be like, well, this is my life.
There's a twig in my foot. This is how I go. Yeah. Can't do it. But then she gets up and she keeps running, but, like, she's obviously limping a lot because there's a giant gash in her foot.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets to this area in the woods where in front of her are all, like, large boulders going up a hill. So it'd be really hard to navigate that. So she just takes a right and runs in the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
She keeps running and the man has caught up to her now, but she is cornered between the rocks that I just talked about and a very violent river.
So that's where it comes in.
There's the river. So the man follows her right up to the shoreline and they've got this, like, mini intense stare down moment before Jess throws herself into the river. Which,
yes.
Yeah. I would do the same thing.
I'd rather die that way.
Same.
You know?
Same. Yeah. I don't even know what his intentions are. I mean, yeah. I got some idea, but, like, I don't I'd rather, and I'm terrified of drowning, but I would rather drown.
Yes.
Than do whatever the hell this man
is going to drag out. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I wrote, this part sucks for me personally.
Yes.
Because we watch as she's repeatedly, like, tossed under the water, like, and, like, comes back up and under the water.
Oh,
and
my
she's
God.
Pulled downstream. Like, water is so strong and so scary. And I hate
know.
It. I hate
I am,
it so much.
I'm scared of the ocean, but, like, it's not on my mind because I'm just nowhere near it. And I'm just like, I don't have to deal with that. Mm-hmm. But, like, the ocean does terrify me. So, I guess any water with, like, a crazy tide, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm not a fan of water either. Also, it's giving me flashbacks to you doing a certain The Last of Us 2 portion.
So true.
And I understand the Caitlin's fear of water is intense.
Yeah, I don't like it at all. Like, I literally feel like I can't breathe when I, like, watch that stuff. It's disgusting. But lucky for Jess, she ends up, like, washing up on a shore. It does – I don't know how long she's been tossing around in the water based on the way it cuts, but – she washes up on a shore and she lets herself lay on the shore to catch her breath. Screen cuts to black with white text saying the rain.
Hmm.
So sometime later, Jess is limping her way through the forest again and her foot is in pain and definitely, like, actively becoming infected because she hasn't wrapped it or anything. So it's like, oh, I don't even want to know, like, what's going on down there.
Yeah.
She grabs a large stick off the ground to use as, like, a walking stick, and she's walking for a bit when she hears some rustling that sounds kind of like human footsteps. So she hides herself behind a tree.
Oh, good. We're hiding now. We're not screaming.
Now we're hiding.
We're making progress.
So we get a shot of her with her back to the tree, holding her stick, like, as a weapon. Mm-hmm. And blurrily behind her, we can see the tip of a shotgun appear as it, like, starts to walk by, followed by a man wearing camo and, like, a nice, like, beanie hat, right?
Okay.
So Jess can't see this person. She just hears them. So she jumps out with her stick and just swings it at this man who goes flying to the ground, but then immediately holds up his shotgun, like, at her.
Uh-huh.
He's an older gentleman, probably in his 60s, and he's looking terrified. Uh-huh. And as soon as Jess realizes that this is not who she thought it was, she drops her stick, puts her hands up in the air. And the man tells her to get down on her knees because, like, yeah, valid. This girl just attacked you.
Yep.
But then she starts, like, begging for this man to help her.
Yes. Okay.
She's coming across as a little insane because, like, she's hysterical saying, a man's trying to kill me. I need to get out of here. She then asks this man, who I'll just give you his name now. His name is Robert. It'll find this out for a while. But she asks Robert for his phone. When he pulls it out of his breast pocket, it's completely smashed because she smashed it with a stick.
Oh, man. Of course.
Yes. So Robert was initially, like, very hesitant, but he can see now that this woman does need help regardless of her situation.
Mm-hmm.
He notices her foot is bleeding and asks what happened, and she's like, I stepped on a root. He invites Jess to follow him back to his car where he says he's got an extra pair of boots that she can wear.
Nice.
So the pair of them
are we going to make it to his car or is he going to get killed before we can do that? I'm stressed. This feels like too easy.
Mm-hmm. So the pair of them walk back.
Wait.
Whoa. What is- sorry. Oh my God. That actually jump scared me so bad, dude.
I'm so sorry.
Oh my God. You
that
have
was
a
like
tendency
a full-on
to do
flinch.
That. I really freaked out.
I just got scared because what if he's in on it? What if he's in on it with the other guy?
Mm.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No, that would be too – no, okay. Maybe this is just a happy ending. It could just be
happy ending.
Just takes her to a car. They go to the police station. They find the guy, lock him up, and there we go.
Just chill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the pair of them, they walk through the woods towards Robert's car. And as soon as they get there – Robert opens up the trunk, pulling out a pair of boots for Jess. These are my wife's, he says. Might be a bit big, but rather that than too small, he says with a smile. He's giving very cute, sweet old man energy.
Okay. I have to say I was triggered by you saying he was smiling, but I understand it. I shouldn't be triggered. Like, he seems like a nice guy, yeah.
He's smiling because he's actually saying something that should be with a smile, unlike our other guy.
Right.
So Robert invites her to get in the passenger seat and off they go. Time to get out of here. They're driving down the desolate woodsy road when Robert asks Jess the last time she ate anything, and she says that she can't remember. Mm-hmm. He tells her that there's sandwiches in the backpack that she can help herself to if she would like. So Jess grabs the bag and, like, pulls out a sandwich and immediately takes a large bite, and she's just got that, like, look of relief on her face. Yeah. Of like, oh my God, food. And she's just so, so happy. He also offers her some water, which she accepts graciously. And Robert keeps driving along the road, tries to comfort Jess, telling her that he's sure that this man's long gone by now, probably trying to come up with some sort of alibi. So guess what happens next?
Okay. Does he pull up to the bad man's house?
So they're driving when they come upon a fallen
tree. No, not
tree.
The Jeep. Oh, okay.
I guess. Just Jeep triggered.
Like the Jeep.
No.
Oh, no, not the fallen tree. Okay. There's,
yes, a fallen tree across the very, very narrow road, blocking their path completely. And Jess immediately panics. She's crying, saying, it's him. This is him. He did this.
Yes.
And Robert's trying to get her to relax, and they both get out of the car, and Jess runs over to the tree trunk and just starts, like, pushing it. It's mm-hmm. not budging, obviously, so mm-hmm. she screams for Robert to come help her, and he knows it's not going to work, but he kind of humors her, and he's like, yes, see, we're not going to be able to move this tree.
Right.
So the sound of an engine comes from the direction they just came from.
Oh, no.
And a blue Jeep rounds the bend.
Oh, no.
Jess is saying, it's him. He'll kill me. Robert tells her to sit back. He's going to take care of it. Mr. Creeper parks the car, gets out, and he's on the phone as he approaches Robert.
Oh.
He says, no, she's standing here. Yeah, she's with somebody. Thank you so much. And I'm sorry that we had to bother you with this again.
Yeah. He's like painting the picture like, oh, I'm sorry she does this. Like, mm-hmm. I'm so happy you found her safe. Like, mm-hmm. I'm here to help. Ew.
Yeah. This man hangs up the phone and looks at Jess saying, Jess, for God's sake. And yeah, I wrote, you can tell what he's doing, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jess is telling him to stay away. So Robert butts in and is like, all right, what is going on? Because poor mm-hmm. Robert is just like, huh? Like, these two people are saying very different things. I'm stressed out.
Yeah.
So the creepy man apologizes to Robert about his sister.
Ugh.
She's not well, you see. Unfortunately for Jess, this seems kind of legit right now because she's screaming and she's like, I'm not your sister, you fucking psycho. Yeah. And she just like says it in the craziest way she possibly can. And I'm like,
girl. That's so annoying because when you see, I don't know, that's hard to like gauge because mm-hmm. it's so enraging see what is happening and that this person is going to like try to pull this over and that he's being smart right now. And it's like, oh my God, no. Like you just want to scream about it.
Right.
But like, obviously if you can, the smart thing to do is like, listen, like this is my story. This is what happened.
Yes.
Please believe me. Like, what is the harm in taking us going to the police station? Either way, no matter whose story is correct here, like, please help.
Right. And we're going to get into that, too, in a minute because I felt the exact same way.
Okay.
About the Deep way breaths. That she's acting, but it's hard to judge her.
Right.
So Robert, of course, still just like, I don't know what to do. He looks at this man and says, I found her about a half hour ago. She said that you kidnapped her. And of course, this guy's like, oh, no. She's having one of our episodes. And before I knew it, she was out the house. She just threw herself into the river. And he's mm-hmm. really convincing. He's mm-hmm. very convincing.
Oh, I'm sure. He's convinced his wife and children that he's a good guy.
Yep. So he tells Robert that Jess's husband recently committed suicide. It's caused her to have triggers. And Jess is in the background not helping her case by screaming, shut up, you sick fuck, and all this stuff. And it's like, oh, girls, just stop. Please stop.
I know.
And I wrote, I feel she would have benefited more from talking to the hunter, aka Robert, as opposed to lashing out at the crate. But I also don't want to judge her too hard. That's literally what I wrote. So, and you already touched upon that because it's like, what? I can't judge.
It's like you're in a crazy.
Valid.
Like it's so easy. Yeah, it's so easy to be like, this is what you should do. But this is one of those situations where it's like, I don't know what I would do though.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I might let like the rage take over. Like in the, you're so scared. Like you can't think straight.
So this kind of, this interaction kind of just keeps floating around in circles before Robert lets the man approach Jess. As she screams for him to get away. He's still unsure, but it seems like he's kind of leaning towards siding with this man.
Sure.
Jess, as she's being completely manhandled by this creep, begs Robert to check the man's phone. One, mm-hmm. see if he actually called somebody. And mm. two, maybe call the police and just check the story.
Yeah.
And Robert likes that idea. He's like, oh, that's not a bad idea. So Jess is like still being grabbed and everything. She manages to break free because she's not sure how this is going to go. So she breaks free and she just takes off running.
Mm-hmm.
This man goes to chase after her, but Robert holds his shotgun up and tells him not to move.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Robert says he just wants to call the police, make sure this story checks out, even if, you know, just for his own peace of mind. Mr. Creepy's like, help me get her in the car first. Like, let's just get her in the car. And Robert says he stands his ground and he demands the phone.
Mm-hmm.
This guy realizes he doesn't really have any choice but to cooperate, right? So he reaches into a pocket, walks toward Robert to hand him the phone.
No.
But
no,
of course
that's
not.
That's where it's... No. So if I'm Robert, what you got to do is you got to keep that gun up, pointed, mm-hmm. and you have to be like, go walk over there, set it right there, mm-hmm. and then go walk and stand over there. Like, you need to keep a distance between you and the person the whole time while you're able to get the phone.
Yep.
He didn't do that.
He didn't. I would have probably said, like, toss it to me or, like, what you said. But he lets the man come close. And, of course, he launches himself at Robert, tackling into the ground. And Jess is observing this from far away and is actually, like, screaming for him to stop. Like, don't do this to him.
Yeah, he's just, like, a nice old man.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, my God, he's so cute. It just makes you so sad.
Oh.
This creepy man's pummeling Robert on the ground, punching him repeatedly before grabbing the shotgun and shooting him in the face. Man. A moment of silence, please, everybody, for Robert.
Yeah, I'm really sad about that. I hate when old people aren't creepy and then they die in movies.
I know. You're like, man, he was just vibing.
I know. It's like on the same wavelength almost. Just like, not to be weird about old people, but they're so cute. It's like on the same thing, wavelength as dogs dying. I just get so unbelievably sad when nice old people die.
Yeah. Yeah, this one hurt me. This one actually hurt me.
Yeah.
So... R.I.P. Robert, and a thunderstorm has rolled in now, and Jess is back to aimlessly wandering the woods and hiding from the creep, who now has a shotgun, which is
great
for us. And we see them both wandering the woods before cutting to black for another black screen.
The storm.
The night.
Damn it. I just want to get one of them right.
And this is our second score check-in.
Okay. Oh. I do think I have to go down at this point,
mm-hmm.
for sure. But we're still standing strong. I'm still unsure if he even wants us dead right away. I think he wants to play with us. If I'm Robert, of course. I think, if I was in the woods for some reason and someone came, this whole situation unfolded, I'd probably die too. So that's actually a big hit if you're thinking about what Robert did. And then, I don't know, I could have died in the river. Like, I'm not a great swimmer.
Yeah, there's like a lot of factors. And for me, something that I have to factor in is like, I don't think I would have been able to break out of the basement like the way that she did that. I'm like,
that is true. That was in this part as well.
So like, that makes it tricky because that's what's interesting about this movie from this perspective is like, it's a lot of just like single scenarios. Like, would you survive each and every one of these little moments? And
yeah,
God, I don't know.
It's hard because that specific, like how she broke out of the basement feels so much like movie convenience.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to like put myself into that and be like, oh, I have to compare it to this really clever, random plan that worked for some reason that probably wouldn't work in a lot of situations.
Absolutely. Yeah, you got to balance it.
I'm going to give myself a 46% for this act.
Okay, I went 53, so this is a situation where I went just above you and just below. But, like, big drop from the first act, which is
absolutely
not uncommon for us. So,
yeah.
All right, final act, here we go.
Let's go.
So we come back, and the storm has really picked up now. It's dark, it's pouring, we've got thunder, we've got lightning, and Jess is in really rough shape at this point. She crouches behind a large tree trunk to take a rest when she sees a beam of light come out of the trees from the direction, like directly behind her.
Mm.
So she stays hidden as the man whistles his way through the woods, moving his flashlight back and forth as he walks. And out of nowhere, like I was confused. There was like a little bit of a red reflective light on the side of the tree.
Oh.
And I don't think Jess sees it. And I'm like, is that like a weird error or something? I'm like, what is that? But then Jess thinks the man's gone, so she gets up to keep going when a bullet pierces her somewhere. I can't tell where because it's so dark. It's in her back, either like her back or her leg, like the back of her leg. I can't tell.
Yeah.
But she goes down and I realized the red light was from the gun, like having like a little laser.
Whatever on it. Those. Yeah. Yeah. For aim.
Yeah. Like at first you're like, what the hell is that red light? Like it doesn't look right at all. But anyway, she tries her best now to like army crawl away. And again, the storm is really strong. It's pitch black. So she does have a good chance here because he was far away when he took that shot. So she's crawling, she's crawling. And she crawls super dark, super hard to tell. It seems like she crawls like almost to like the edge of where there's like a super small pond.
Okay.
As the man follows close behind her. And she backs herself into the water, like keeping her head just above the water, but like she's under some brush.
Mm-hmm.
It's so very hard to tell what's going on, but trust me. Let's just go with pond.
Yeah.
The storm quiets down a bit as the man approaches. I know you're close, he says. I know I hit you. I give you about 2 hours before you bleed to death. He encourages her to come out and fight while she still can. He tells her that he's going to play fair. He puts the shotgun down on the ground and walks away from it. You have 1 minute to try and grab it.
Oh my God. Well, yeah. I'm not going for it, obviously.
Same. Yeah. The same boat. So this guy is enjoying so very much enjoying listening to himself talk here, like I do, you know,
and us on a podcast,
us on a podcast, literally. And he's going to ramble on here for a bit. He's going to turn in circles as he's talking to wherever the heck Jess might be in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll share some of his lovely words with you now. Are you too scared? You know, the one thing I can't stand? Cowards. Just like that husband of yours. Why'd he kill himself anyway? Was he too weak? You know, people who are thinking about killing themselves, they usually cry out for help. That might just really tear you apart, knowing that he probably tried to tell you.
Mm.
That guilt must be something else. He was supposed to be the father of your children, and now he's rotting in a grave somewhere. All that sorrow, all that guilt would drive me nuts if I were you. He was a coward. I know fear when I see it. It's all in the eyes. People think they can hide it, but they can't. Not for me. Prove to me that I'm wrong. Show me some fucking guts. Show me you're just a little bit better than that shitbag husband of yours. Do you hear me? I'm gonna get you, you delicious fucking bitch.
Ew.
Yeah. So and it's crazy, like this is so drawn out, this little speech of his. Like he pauses for a long time between every line and he's just like, he's really relishing in this. And when he finally finishes up, he reaches down and grabs his shotgun and walks away, all while Jess has just been hiding in that same spot the entire time. Yes, I agree with that 100%.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if he is the type, you know, sometimes they are the type of crazy where if you surprise them or impress them, they're like, all right, you can go.
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes they are that crazy. I don't think he is. I think it was just.
Yeah. I think he's more just like wants what he wants and that's it. So he like completely walks away. So Jess feels comfortable to pull herself out of the water as we get another cut to black with the clearing on the screen.
Hmm.
It's the next morning now and the storm has passed and Jess is sleeping in some brush. And I guess she didn't bleed out. I don't know. Like he brought that whole thing about bleeding out, which I guess was just a bluff. Like she's chilling.
To an
extent, you know. And she slowly gets up, looks around, and it's super calm, honestly. Like the birds are chirping. It's quiet. We have some pretty nice calm piano music playing as well. And she just continues her aimless march through the woods, looking for anyone or anything that could help her.
Honestly, I'd be pretty, I don't know. I was going to say I'd be pretty hopeful because we came across that hunter. So it's like, okay, is this like, there's got to be other houses around here. Like people probably have like stations or houses for like hunting land and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And thank God for that sandwich that she got a little bit of.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's interesting because it's like, I feel like I would be hopeful in this situation. But at the same time, like his ability to find us is so... Right. Freaking infuriating.
It's like goofy. Like, how are you even doing that? Like, maybe I should just turn myself in because, like, good job, dude. How are you doing?
I know, right? Exactly. So, suddenly, she once again hears the revving of a car engine. So, she stays back off the road, but puts herself in a position where she can, like, see what's going on.
Yep.
And the blue Jeep drives by and up the road a little bit before parking. The man gets out of the car with his shotgun and opens up the trunk, where he pulls out Robert's body and drags it into the woods.
Oof.
He drags him over to a pre-dug grave about 20 yards off the road, and Jess keeps eyeing the car as the man begins to bury Robert beneath the dirt.
Mm.
While the man's preoccupied, Jess makes her way quietly toward the Jeep, and she manages to quietly open the driver's side door.
Oh my God. Inside. Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
The keys aren't in there.
She's looking around for the keys.
Okay.
But unfortunately, they don't seem to be in here.
That could have been great. Imagine. Then we could start stalking him with his own dumbass Jeep.
That would be so fun. Oh my God. I would love that. I'd watch that movie.
Yeah.
But when she does go to look in the middle console, she comes across his phone.
Okay.
She's able to unlock it, but when she looks over, the man has finished burying Robert and is now making his way back to the car. So she quickly, like,
gotta run.
Well, she jumps into the back seat and then throws herself over the, like, second row, like, into the trunk area.
Uh-huh.
Before the man gets himself sat in the driver's seat.
Oh my God.
So we're just,
why,
like,
are we doing
in
this?
The trunk.
No, why are we doing this? Oh my God. As soon as I was in there, first of all, you got to be so frantic. You got to, like, if I can't find the keys in like 3 seconds, it's like, okay, I can't find the key. Like, they're not here.
Right.
And then as soon as I find the phone, grab it and run back into the woods.
I think that would have been smart. I think by the time, like, she was, like, fidgeting around with it, he would have seen her get out, unfortunately.
Mm.
But she did have a little time she could have run. The window is small. I will give her that.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, once he's headed back, it's like, what else can you do other than hide in the trunk, I guess. Right.
Exactly. So he gets in the car, he sits down, and he looks around as though he can feel something is off, but mm-hmm. he ultimately ignores those feelings and starts up the car. So off we go. He's driving, he's sipping his coffee in silence. Everything's pretty calm and normal. And in the trunk area, Jess is trying to remain as quiet as possible as she dials 911 on the man's phone.
Mm-hmm.
The operator answers, asking, what is your emergency? And Jess, like, barely, I don't even want to call it a whisper. She more like just, like, breathes, like, help me, into the phone.
Yeah.
And the woman tells her to speak up, but obviously she can't.
Right.
Tell me why her next line to this operator is,
oh God,
there's a man in glasses.
What?
Girl, is that the next piece of information that needed to be shared?
There are so many men in glasses. She's like, eradicate all the men in glasses. Help.
Like, I didn't pick up on this the first time. The second time, I'm like, wait, what did she just say? Because then her third line is, I've been kidnapped. Like, why
was that?
The third
line, help.
I'm just like, okay, whatever you say, girly.
Is it true, like, this is in modern day, so it's like mm-hmm. 2020. Can you just, like, not speak, and will they still be able to, like, track your moving cell and, get out to you wherever you end up?
I think that is something that can happen. Mm-hmm. But I've always wondered, like, what is the standard for that?
Yeah.
Like, at what point do you have to send out, like, a cop to that location or whatever? Because sometimes, like, butt dials happen. I've butt dialed 911 more than once in my life, and, like, nobody's shown up. Because, like, somebody could dial 911 and only have the call for 4 seconds and actually need help.
Yeah.
I just don't know where they draw
I wonder if it would be smart to hang up and call again and then just let it sit in silence and then hang up and call again. Like, I bet they have a number where it's, like, if they call 3 times.
Right.
Or something like that. With, like, silence, go. Or even 2. It probably should be 2 in silence. I don't know. Personally, it should be 1 in silence. Like, you just gotta go. Yeah. But I don't know if they do that.
Right. So she says, like, I've been kidnapped. He's trying to kill me. And the operator again asks Jess to speak up.
Right.
So Jess actually just says, trace this call. So, like, that is what she wants to happen. And it looks like she hangs up the phone, but, like, there's no way she does that. Like, because I would just leave it on.
As long as you can.
I think that's what they need. They need time to trace the call.
Yeah.
So up front, the man starts looking for something, and we can tell he's realized his phone is not in the car.
Mm-hmm.
So he pulls the car over and stops. He looks through the console. He looks on the door. He looks in the glove compartment, but he can't seem to find it anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Then he just kind of, like, has a moment where he just, like, stops and peers into the rearview mirror, like, looking at the trunk. And he turns his head And I don't know if Jess could see him, but she decides she can't wait any longer. So she grabs the tire iron from the back, sits up, and swings it into the side of his head.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
The tire iron being there for us is so goaded.
I know.
We got this. We got this.
We got this, right? So the man slams his foot on the gas and starts driving like a madman. Well, mm-hmm. Jess continues to whack him in the head with the tire iron.
Nice.
Now this man pulls out his knife and starts like swinging it toward the back seat, trying to hit Jess. And she
ain't gonna get me.
I'm gonna duck and dodge. Woo woo. So Jess jams his like wrist hard, like she hits his wrist. It causes the knife to fall out of his hand into the back seat. So in this moment, she somehow manages to put like the tire iron in front of the man and across his neck and like hold him against the seat.
Nice.
So she's like choking him, right? The man's fighting back with one hand while also keeping the other hand on the wheel. He's trying to use the car's momentum to like get Jess off of him.
Yeah.
Which is actually pretty smart. So the car's skidding back and forth before the man slams on the brakes, causing Jess to go flying. Mm. She falls into the back seat, but she falls right next to the knife. So she picks it up, pierces it into the man's wrist, which like goes through his wrist and into the center console, like pinning his arm to the console. The man finally loses control of the car as it goes careening off the road, rolling over before coming to a stop upside down.
Oof.
And everything just goes like it's just pure stillness and pure quiet.
Yeah.
And we sit on a far shot of the car in silence for a beat before one of the back doors swings open. Jess crawls out of the car weaker than she's ever been before. Mm-hmm. And she just like lays down in the mud and looking up at the trees above her, like very folklore style, if you know that shot.
Oh, cute.
Yeah, cutesy. So Jess can hear the sound of a helicopter just before she sees it pass over her head.
Oh my God.
And I think this sight is like what gives her that last bit of strength and motivation that she needs. Because she kind of gave the vibe like, this is it, you know?
Yeah.
Like she was completely defeated. But she sees that and she gets up. She grabs a tire iron and makes her way down the road, slowly but surely.
Mm-hmm.
It's now that we see that the man is still alive, but also in very, very rough shape. He, too, tries to call out of the car, and his glasses are broken now, so he just takes them off and throws them to the side as he gets up. Jess has found her way to a clearing. She limps out into the clearing and looks to the sky, and the helicopter can still be heard, but it sounds like it's more distant now. Jess takes out the man's phone, and luckily it's still working, so she dials. But this time she doesn't call 911. On the other line, we hear the voice of a little girl answer. Hi, Daddy.
Oh, my God.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Hi. Is Mommy there? I cannot tell this little girl that her dad's trying to kill me.
Jess immediately asks to talk to the girl's mom.
Good.
And we hear, like, the little girl in the background, like, Mom, someone's on the phone for you.
Ooh.
So
this is so smart, though, because it's, like, I feel like doing this, it's, like, I might not live, but I need to stop him from doing this to anyone else ever again.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, I like this moment, like this call here, because it just, I was like, oh, that's a good way to do it. So a woman comes to the phone and introduces herself as Catherine Dillon. Mm. Jess cuts to the chase. This is your husband's phone, right? The woman is confused, saying, yes, but like, who is this?
Right.
Jess just asks her if she knows where her husband is right now. The woman, still confused, so she doesn't know what she's talking about. Jess cuts her off to ask again, getting a little more aggressive this time.
Mm-hmm.
The woman on the other line says, my husband, he's in California on a business trip. And Jess just cuts her off saying, no, he's not.
Mm-hmm.
At this moment, the man emerges from the woods and into the clearing. Jess continues, he's a kidnapper and a murderer.
Mm-hmm.
She's like intentionally speaking louder now so that the guy can hear
her
talking on the phone.
I want him to know too, yeah.
Right? So then, oh my God. So then Catherine goes, is this a joke? Sam, are you there? This is the first time you get his name.
Oh, yeah.
In the movie. And it felt, I don't know why it felt important to me to wait.
I mean,
till
it's
now.
Weird because he is just scary killer man. And then all of a sudden he has a name and it just makes it even crazier.
Yeah.
You know, and it like humanizes him, but
mm-hmm.
like not in a good way. It's not making me feel up for anything for him at all. It makes me feel even worse because it's like, Freaking Sam, what the fuck are you doing?
Of course, and like also like Sam, okay, No disrespect to anyone with the name Sam, like, because it's not a bad name. But, like, for this man, it just feels like a pathetic name for him. Yeah. And I can't explain why.
Like, I'm like, why isn't his name, like, Thatcher?
Yeah, right?
Or it's something just, like
Sam. Yeah. Like, it's just Sammy. Like, it's no big deal. Whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she's like, Sam, are you there? You want to talk to him? Jess asks loud enough for Sam to hear. She puts the phone on speaker and holds it up in the air. You have a phone call, she yells to him. He's about 20 feet away now. His wife is panicked on the phone. Sam, are you there? She yells in distress through the speakerphone. What's going on? Talk to me. And Sam doesn't say anything. Then Jess goes, my name is Jessica Swanson. And if this is the last time you hear from me, it's because your husband killed me. Just like he killed a man named Robert. The woman screams for Sam again as Jess throws the phone toward him, saying, go ahead, talk to your wife.
Amazing.
It's honestly very satisfying, all of this.
Because it's like, even if you don't kill me, like, that's satisfying, and it's in and of itself, I guess. Like, yay, I get to live. But if you do, like, she has a family that is going to be, like, investigating her going missing.
Yep.
And his wife is going to see that, and it's all going to come out. Like, this is over for him.
Exactly. For the first time, Sam truly actually looks defeated. And then he just kind of says very, like, level. He's just like, I just need to take care of something. His wife continues to scream his name into the phone, asking what's going on, but Sam just picks up the phone, says bye, and hangs up. Just bye. And then he does all this while, like, keeping his eyes fixed on Jess, like, very just, like, intently. And so now the two of them stand face to face, battered and bruised, Jess with the tire iron, Sam with the knife.
Okay.
They have a stare down before Sam finally lunges himself at Jess, and a hand-to-hand combat moment ensues.
Wild.
Yes.
I mean, tire iron is, like, longer, so you have more range, right? That's helpful. I think I'd choose the tire iron over the knife in a 1v1.
I think I agree with that. It just seems easier to, like, swing, whereas a knife, I feel like you got to get close, and that's a good point. So Jess is able to dodge him and then swing the tire iron across his face, knocking him down. She jumps on top of him, straddling his body. Holds a tire iron above her head, but Sam's, like, grabbing at her wrists, like, holding them up so that she can't bring it down. He kicks her in the gut, manages to flip himself on top of her now, where he punches her across the face. He goes to stab her, but again, Jess kicks him off of herself, and they go back and forth, dominating each other, you know, over and over. Lots of hand-to-hand combat before Sam gets a solid slice across Jess's stomach.
Oof.
And she screams in pain but continues to fight back. She bites his arm, causing him to fall back in pain. And I think she literally bites a chunk of his skin off because she, like, spits something at him. And I think it's, like, his own skin. It's so nasty.
I know I could never.
Same. That's one I couldn't pull off. Sam falls back in pain, and this gives Jess the opportunity to stab him right in the stomach. So it seems that, like, she's really gotten the best of Sam at this point, and she's holding herself over Sam as he's beginning to just fade out. It seems like he's really gone now, and Jess rolls over on her side facing Sam. And Sam rolls over to look back at her, and Jess has the craziest of crazy eyes as she's like staring back at him. Like, her eyes are so wide, she's completely covered in mud. And the sound of a heartbeat plays over this stare down of two people truly on their last legs. Like, they're both completely fading. And the heartbeat picks up some more until it resembles the sound of a chopper. Jess and Sam's hair begin to blow in the wind as Jess turns over to look up into the sky. The movie ends on a centered shot of Jess's face covered in cuts and mud, staring up to the sky, as we can assume the chopper makes its way down to rescue her. Now, the end. Now, the interesting thing here is it's not 100% clear that he died. You don't see him take his final breath, which I think is...
I kind of hope he doesn't. I hope he goes to prison for life.
Same. Mm-hmm. And I think I like that interpretation of it better than she kills him.
Yeah.
You just don't know, because they're just, like, fighting. And then he's just kind of out.
Yeah.
And then he, like, really is fading, but that final breath is never shown.
Okay. That's my headcanon. He's spending a life in prison. I hope his family's okay.
Yeah.
I know I wouldn't be, but.
No, same. Probably not.
Man, it really comes down, like, for this final survivability, it comes down to that 1v1.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I don't know about that.
Same. That's the thing that sucks. This is very much a movie where there's a lot of decisions where you would have made it out way earlier, but if you're gonna do it like this, then you're dead. Like,
yeah,
it sucks.
I think for the final act, there's the chance that in this final act, I'm able to get away from the car with the phone. That's possible.
Yes, absolutely.
So, but if I can't manage to do that, then yikes. Probably not gonna be able to hold my own in that 1v1. Although, like I said, it's nice that to have that tire iron. That's a good weapon.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to give myself a 14%.
Okay. I did 17. So
yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, unfortunately, it's when it comes to like a man, a woman, hand-to-hand combat, I'm down and out, guys. I'm so sorry.
And she's, again, in Wrong Turn 2, we got a bite out of a man's neck, a bite and spit. Out of a man's neck. And here we're biting and spitting again, and I cannot do that.
I can't
pull that move. Okay, so my weighted is a 38%.
All right, mine's a 42. So what does that bring us? A 40%?
40%.
Is that too high? I think it's
fine. I think it's fine.
Because we have such a good chance of escaping at the start.
Exactly. I think because I'm in like the fresh phase of Act 3 right now, it does feel high. But I think when you take the whole movie into account, this is actually accurate. I think our weighteds work for this one.
I think you're right. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, because, yeah, in that moment right there, I was like, the hand to hand. But no, we have a lot of other opportunities to get out of here.
Before it comes to that.
Damn. Yeah, so this movie to me, I like the vibes of this film a lot because I think it's just like touches upon a lot of, like, the movie's called Alone, and I think being alone anywhere, like, as a woman can be super scary and intimidating, and this movie kind of touches upon those themes a lot. And I will say, like, I do enjoy this movie, but it is a movie where you have to suspend belief to infinity because of these and it's just a cat and mouse chase the whole film, and it's just basically like crazy scenario after crazy scenario, which a lot of people don't like, but I enjoyed it just because
I like it. Yeah,
he was so creepy and she was pretty badass.
Because this is like realistically my nightmares. Like, I know it's like you have to suspend disbelief and like it's not super, super probably accurate to what is going on in real life, although sometimes it is. Sometimes this happens more than I would like to admit. But like, my nightmares are, it's just me and it's a man. And I'm trying to get away.
Yes. So, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's actually a great way to look at this movie, is like, it really is just like nightmares.
Yeah.
Nightmare sequences over and over.
Exactly.
That's Alone, everybody. Alone 2020. If you haven't seen it, give it a watch. Why not? Thank you guys, as always, so much for tuning in, for hanging out with us this week. As always, please check us out over on Instagram at I'd Survive Podcast. There you can also find the link to our Discord, where you too can submit your own score. So let us know, would you survive